Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty, along with Rita Dunaway, and we are once again going to do something we've never done before. Let me give you a little background as our listeners. A common theme in all of our programs has been the challenge that we face in how to apply our Christian faith to the moral meltdown that we see in the culture around us, where faith and culture meet. In addition, how do we confront the challenges to our inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that too often come from our very own government? Well, these are not new challenges. They are as old as creation. And throughout history, we have been tempted just to keep our heads down, to go along to get along, and to be quiet when we should be speaking up. Is that what Jesus did? Is that what he calls us to do as salt and light to the world? But be careful, because even when we do speak out, how can we do it in a way that will win hearts rather than turning them away? Furthermore, are we ready to face opposition and even persecution that very often follows when we speak out? So, to help answer these questions, Rita and I, and this is the new thing that we've never done before, we will be unveiling a book called Why You Can't Stay Silent. The subtitle is A Biblical Mandate to Shape Our Culture. This book was written by Tom Minery from Focus on the Family and has been a tremendous help and inspiration to our work as the Valley Family Forum. So, Rita, take it away and help us understand why we can't stay silent.
Well, I am happy to do that. Before we plunge in, though, I want to point out that even though this book is not in print anymore, I think that's what you told me, Dean, you still can get it on Amazon, which is where I buy plenty of my books anyway. So it's, again, Why You Can't Stay Silent by Tom Minery, and it is definitely worth your while to read through this. And I really think it's timeless. You know, the principles that it sets forth, the great examples, and just the wealth of good information in the book make it worthwhile for anyone to read.
And Rita, by way of further background, when we started the Valley Family Forum in 2002, 14 years ago, I looked for a book, some kind of a textbook that help us understand what our call is and how we are to fulfill that call to be salt and light. This book is head and shoulders above any of the other books that I researched for this purpose. Very, very helpful. Yes. And especially for churches. Yes. How can we establish sort of a citizenship ministry within our churches? How to be salt and light in our culture and to the world?
It's a great blueprint. So let's go ahead and dive in. In the introduction, Minery starts off right away with a pretty significant challenge. He asks us, what would Jesus want us, his followers, to do about the decay of morality all around us? And that really sets the stage for everything that follows in the book. He points out that there is an inconsistency in the way we as Christians tend to admire believers who are in influential roles in the secular world, a reporter, an actress, a businessman, who, you know, are outspoken believers. We so admire them and love to talk about them, and yet there is also this tendency to want to pull talented believers out of secular pursuits and into full-time ministry positions. And I would put full-time ministry in quote because hopefully we are all in full-time ministry, right?
Yes.
But there's a tendency to want to pull so many Christians out of their secular pursuits and vocations into positions that involve very little contact with the secular world. And, you know, I have just been acquainted with that so often throughout my life. In fact, when I was in high school, I remember a gentleman coming and just devoting so much time and energy to trying to convince me not to go to law school because the world of attorneys and the law was just too far gone. There's nothing you can do. You're not going to make a difference. There are too many of them and too few of you. It was really discouraging to me, although, as you know, he didn't get his wish and keep me from going to law school. But I think that's all around us. You know, we hear it in politics. Don't go into politics. There are, you know, politicians are crooked and you're not going to make a difference. But Minnery asks, are we salt made to be rubbed into a decaying culture for the purpose of preservation? What does it mean to be in the world and not of it, and to be salt and light?
Well, Rita, I think we've both seen that tendency where people consider ministry to be within the confines of the church.
Yeah.
And you're not really being a full-time Christian unless you go to a foreign country somewhere. I have said many times, and I feel it more and more strongly, it's almost time for a missionary recall.
Yes.
We need you at home.
Yes.
Because we have the mission fields on our doorsteps, in our communities, and even in our churches.
That's right.
So we cannot avoid engagement with the world.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus doesn't call us to withdrawal. He calls us to engagement. So in chapter 1, now getting back to this book, Why You Can't Stay Silent, Tom Minnery explores this very question of whether Christians can make a difference in their culture and in their government. And he addresses this because, believe it or not, and you've already alluded to it, there have been Christian leaders, I won't mention any names, but they're very prominent ones
mm-hmm.
that people place a lot of confidence in. Nationally known pastors and teachers who have suggested that Christians should have little to do with their government except to obey it. They say, for example, government can't save you. Well, that is a red herring. It's a straw man. That's what
yeah.
it is. It's a straw man. Because they're putting up a false argument. Nobody
right.
says that government can save us.
Right.
And yet they're making that argument to say that Christians should not get involved in government. They should simply live in their own isolated spheres within the four walls of the church and enjoy their Sunday dinners.
Well, and Dean, I have to point out that it's just completely inconsistent with the type of government we have as Christians in America. We are a self-governing people. That is the foundation of our whole system of government. So to suggest that Christians should just withdraw from any involvement with government, it is just, it's absurd.
Well, the logical consequence of that is if Christians withdraw,
yeah.
that leaves the stage wide open,
yes.
the door wide open to those who do not profess any belief in God, and look where that is getting us.
That's right.
Well, against that background, Minnery then goes on to give us some examples of ordinary Americans who have had a huge impact on the culture around them because they chose to take a stand. What are some of those examples, Rita?
Well, the first was a man, Tom Wilson from Vermont, who took a stand when Vermont first passed a law granting same-sex couples the privileges of marriage.
The first in the country to
yeah,
do so.
Yeah, yeah. He started a movement in his state, awakening pastors, friends, and neighbors to what was happening. And Dean, of course, we know that this legislative battle was not ultimately won by Tom Wilson and his movement. But what is significant is that he recognized his duty to carry the banner of truth into the public square. Tom's pastor quoted 2 Corinthians 10, verses 3 through 4, "For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world." And the pastor said, you know, a lot of people stop there at that point in the passage, but it actually continues. "We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ." And you know, the quote in the book from Tom's pastor that I just love is this one: "The church must be a public voice for the eternal truths of God."
Well, here was a military veteran, came back to America. All he wanted to do was take care of his orchard and raise sheep.
Yeah.
And yet when he saw what was happening in Vermont specifically,
and the violation of God's law, he said, somebody's got to do something.
You know, Dean, that sounds remarkably similar to your own story of coming back from years overseas and realizing how much America had changed and that you simply had to do something about it, which led you to action, right?
The Valley Family Forum. And as we referred to it, it was a Rip Van Winkle epiphany. Mm-hmm. We were asleep for so long and then came back and saw what was happening. I like, though, what you said about the importance of carrying the banner of truth into the public square. These aren't just opinions. Mm-hmm. This is truth. Where do we get our truth? We get it from special revelation, the Word of God, written in the Bible. And I have discovered as we've gone through this, Rita, truth is an intoxicating beverage. Mm. The more you get of it, the more you want of it, and the more you want to share it with others, carrying that banner of truth. Well, Tom Minery gives us another example that really had a direct effect on us, and you were a part of this. This was a story of three mothers, Bonnie, Brenda, and Jan. They were from Wabash, Indiana, where I come from. I'm a Hoosier. I was a Hoosier. I came to Virginia as soon as I could. But they took action when they noticed that a magazine aimed at adolescent girls, but containing offensive, inappropriate material, was being carried in local stores. Well, the first thing they did was go to the store managers. And when that didn't work, they threatened a boycott of the stores. They started a letter-writing campaign to the magazine's advertisers and were successful in getting major advertisers to pull their ads from the magazine. That magazine eventually went out of business.
Mm-hmm. And as you referenced, Dean, that reminds me of an action the Valley Family Forum took, and this was early on in the life of the forum when, you know, not long after you and I met. And some concerned citizens noticed that some of our local stores right here in Harrisonburg were displaying explicit magazines right next to the candy in their stores. Remind us what happened next.
It is very parallel, and it was inspired by this story of these three women in Wabash, Indiana. If they can do it, we can do it.
That's right.
I wandered into a sheet store, and just passing by, it's always on the way to the restrooms, candy bars on one side, eye level to a 10-year-old boy, and I saw these pornographic magazines on the other side. I said, this cannot be. I started approaching store managers. They didn't like it either, but it was company policy, and what can a store manager do? Probably risk their job if they take opposition to this. What we did was we wrote to the headquarters in Pennsylvania, and we called their attention to some of the articles that were in those magazines. We asked them to pull those magazines from the store. They didn't immediately respond, but then they said, well, we're coming to Harrisonburg for a meeting. Let's get together and talk. We gathered, half a dozen of us, with them, and at one point, when they didn't seem to be responding, I remember suggesting that perhaps they're putting profit over principle. You would have thought I put a live hand grenade in the middle of the table. How dare you?
That did it.
But guess what? After a couple of weeks, those magazines were off the shelf. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, I just encourage people, go to your managers. Mm-hmm. Ask them to come over to the shelves. Say, does this magazine really belong in a family-friendly, convenient store, eye level to a 10-year-old across from the candy bars?
Yeah.
And if they can't respond, just give them your contact information. Ask them to pass your objections over to your regional supervisor, to headquarters.
Well, you know, before we move on, Dean, I just have to comment on those stories, and particularly the last two, you know, of the magazines, the example given in the book, but also our own experience here in Harrisonburg. And that is, we can make a difference when we work together and when we work smart and we're respectful and we're winsome and we have a strategy. And again, we work together. That part is key. You know, I think so often we're inclined to see situations like this and just to think, I can't change that. There's nothing I can do. It's company policy. Sheetz is a big company. The manager can't do anything about it, and certainly I can't. But these examples prove otherwise. We can make a difference. And, you know, shame on us if we're not doing everything we can to make that difference. And then, you know, I want to also go back, though, to the previous story of Tom. Was it Tom Wilson?
Yes.
And he didn't ultimately win his battle, as we pointed out. But that is not a reason to be discouraged, because the battle is the Lord's. And he will accomplish his purposes when we are faithful to do what he has called us to do. Who was it that said this? James Dobson. That God doesn't call us to be successful. He calls us to be faithful. And so if we accomplish nothing more than carrying the banner of truth, that people can see it, we are accomplishing something that is significant.
Well, I am reminded of a recent Supreme Court decision to overturn what a Texas legislature did to try to make abortion clinics safer for their women. So even though the Supreme Court overturned that action, and again, it's an abuse of their authority, but what impressed me was that the pro-life leaders just continued to say, we will not stop. We won't give up. We won't give in. And we won't quit until we win. The battle goes on every day through every generation. And it goes back to what we did, and I think we've talked about this before in the program, which is to get rid of the SOBs in Harrisonburg, the sexually oriented businesses. Yes, we can make a difference. And our elected leaders need to hear the voice of we the people, so that they have a reason for taking appropriate action.
Well, we're going to move on, Dean, today to Chapter 2 of Why You Can't Stay Silent. And Chapter 2, the main idea of it is to point out that Christians have always done something to make a difference in their culture. It starts with the story of the Good Samaritan, which Jesus used to illustrate genuine love for one's neighbor. And Minnery then uses it to point out what a high bar Jesus set for us as his followers. Minnery said, we cannot wait to meet or know someone personally before acting in his or her best interests. Nor can we argue convincingly that God calls us only to care about individuals while ignoring the injustices that put so many lives, such as those of unborn children, in jeopardy. God's love stops at nothing. End quote.
Well, Rita, I also really love Minnery goes back to, why do Christians take these actions? And he identifies twin truths. We talked about intoxicating truths. The twin truths that have made the Christian church a community that is marked by compassion. And those truths are, first of all, that we are neighbors to all people, and that all people are of infinite worth. Two twin truths. And I have to read this quote from a historian, Kenneth Scott Latourette. Is that how you pronounce that?
Latourette.
That Minnery has in his book regarding the influence of the Christian church throughout history. Here's what he writes. Referring specifically to Jesus, he says, no life ever lived on this planet has been so influential in the affairs of men. From his brief life and that frustration that flowed from it came a more powerful force for the triumphal waging of man's long battle than any other life ever known by the human race. Through it, hundreds of millions have been lifted from illiteracy and ignorance. His life has done more to allay the physical ills of disease and famine than any other impulse known to man. Through his life and his example, the Christian church has emancipated millions from chattel slavery and millions of others from the thraldom to vice. That impulse and the Christian church has protected tens of millions of other people from exploitation by their fellows. The church has been the most fruitful source of movements to lessen the horrors of war and to put the relations of men and of nations on the basis of justice and peace. That is the role of the church that so many people today are trying to silence so that the government can replace the church as the source of good. It's the Christian church that has been at the forefront of this movement.
It is amazing to read about and reflect on the influence of the early church on a culture in which so many among the population were considered outcasts. Despite the terrible persecution of the early church, its impact included improving the lives of women, protecting children, embracing slaves as people made in God's image, abolishing gladiator shows, and advocating for humane treatment of prisoners and the poor.
I have to bring it up here again. I think it is people of the church who are looking at efforts to open up girls' bathrooms and locker rooms to men and boys who happen to feel like girls. It is the voice of the church that's saying, we will not comply with these orders. They're the ones who are leading the boycott of Target, for example. Yeah. We will not go in there because we don't feel safe as a place to go. But again, getting back to the story, let's go into the Middle Ages then, when the church as a whole was no longer a major arm of reform. As Minnery points out, the church actually began to flounder when secular government officials embraced it. However, there were still pockets where the church was fulfilling its mandate to be salt and light. And he has the story of St. Patrick, sent as a missionary to Ireland, who took Christianity, but he also took literacy and education. And I see that as such an important part of missionary work, both here at home as well as overseas. We are challenged not only to present the gospel of salvation, but also the call to sanctification, so that people's lives are improved by their embrace of the gospel. It's like two wings of a bird. You need the gospel of salvation, but you also need the call to salvation. You need them both.
Minnery says, in every age, the church's campaigns for righteousness were evident. But then he says something that should be troubling to us today. He says, today the church is not so much at war with culture as it is at war with itself about culture. Should today's Christian people engage or not? Should the church stand as a bulwark athwart the quickening river of unrighteousness, or should it simply pull survivors one by one to a heavenly high ground and ignore the gathering flood? End quote. Dean, how would you answer that question?
Well, I'm always surprised when I hear an argument against church involvement in our culture and in our government because it might interfere with evangelism. The answer, Rita, to me is very simple. As I've alluded to before, we need to be both. We need to stand strong against the evil in our culture, but we also need to help turn the hearts of people toward God and His call on their lives and making a difference in the world around us. It's the classic challenge that the Bible addresses, where we are called to tear down the strongholds of evil, like Joshua did at Jericho, but also to rebuild the broken down walls as Nehemiah did at Jerusalem. However, saying that, the battle we are in today is more of a spiritual battle. We talked about this earlier. It's more a spiritual battle than a political battle. Once we turn our hearts back to God, both individually and as a nation, the politics will follow.
You know, Dean, I just wanted to point out, just so there's no misunderstanding, it isn't that what we're saying today or what Tom Minnery is saying is that the primary role of the church is to do good works and, you know, take care of the poor. That is not the primary role of the church. We know that. The primary role of the church is the teaching and preaching of the gospel.
Yes.
And nobody's arguing with
exactly.
that. But what Minnery is saying, and I think what we all need to understand, is that being engaged with the culture around us, being engaged with our society, is a natural result
yes.
of Christianity, because Christianity involves loving our neighbor as the Good Samaritan did.
Yes.
And so if we are unconcerned with what we see going on around us, we are not loving our neighbor very well.
You know, that really brings me to a simple story. But I just before I say that, we do have this motto in the Valley Family Forum: the transformed heart leads to the sanctified life. Yeah. When your heart is transformed, you want to do good. You want to help your neighbor. And the story is this. It's the tension between being socially active or helping the poor. Mm-hmm. It's the story of a fence and the ambulance. There was this English town situated on the edge of a cliff. People kept falling over that cliff. So finally, the elders of the town said, "Well, we got to put an ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, so when people fall over, we can take them to the hospital." Well, that went on and on. More and more people kept falling all off. They kept getting hurt, but we're taking care of them. We got an ambulance down there. Finally, one wise old gentleman said, "Well, why can't we build a fence by that cliff and prevent?" "Oh no, we've never done it that way. The ambulance is working just fine." But the point of the story is we need both. We need, as you're doing with the Convention of States, as we do with the Forum, we're trying to build a fence to protect people from falling over the cliff. Yeah. It's important to help those who do fall over, but we need both. Mm-hmm. We need the prevention and we need the cure. So, Rita, what struck you most out of these initial portions?
Well, I think it's what we are just finishing up talking about now, and that is that cultural engagement is really a matter of loving our neighbor as Christ called us to do. You know, a lot of people today put it in terms of, well, you're trying to impose your morality upon me. No, we are loving you. You know, a parent who loves his or her child, or, you know, even his or her friend or sister and brother, wants what is best for that person. And when we see someone engaged in a behavior or a pattern that is clearly harmful to them, we don't just stand back and say, "Well, you know, I love you, so go ahead and do it your way." No, we get involved. We get involved and we're active, and we try to point that person back toward what is healthy, what is true, and what is good.
Well, Rita, I think that really explains our call. Your call and my call, when people say you can't legislate morality, I beg your pardon. We have a law that says you shall not kill.
Yes.
That is a moral question.
Absolutely.
And even though we cannot transform the human heart, that's something that only God can do. We can nevertheless, through our efforts in the culture and in the public square, we can formulate public policies that will help modify behavior so that they don't bring harm to others.
That's right.
So it's a call on all of us. And again, we would just encourage all of you, go to Amazon and order the book, Why You Can't Stay Silent by Tom Minery, A Biblical Mandate to Shape Our Culture. Well, that brings us to a close in the review of this outstanding book. And it is a call on all of us. As Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify our Father who is in heaven." If you would like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, just go to our website, valleyfamilyforum.org, and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. Well, I also want to thank two of our sponsors, Blue Ridge Chimney Services, Dunaway Dentistry. Check them out. Let them help you with your chimney and your teeth. As always, we're deeply grateful for your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you would like to make a tax-deductible donation to help Crossroads stay on the air, you can do so by check to P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, 22803. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway and our engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet.
Let us rejoice. voice ring.